The 13 cents is still up here. I'm going to read a nonsense children's poem for my daughter. It's called Doctor in the Horse, House, Mouse for Barbara. Is there a doctor in the horse? There's a lady in the horse. A doctor, a lady, a horse. Is there a doctor in thee? There's a lady in thee. A doctor, a lady, a... There's a lady in thee, a doctor in the mouse. Lady in the doctor. There's a lady in the mouse, a doctor in the lady. A horse, doctor, lady. Is there? There's a lady in the mouse. A doctor, doctor in the house. Doctor, lady, horse, house, house. Is there? There's a doctor in the horse. House in the doctor. Lady in the mouse. Doctor, a lady, horse, house. Mouse in the horse. Horse, horse in the mouse. Doctor in the doctor. Lady in the lady. House in the house. Mouse in the horse. Doctor in the lady, in the lady, in the lady. Mouse, mouse. Next poem is called The Very Air He Breathes. It's an advertisement. She lies upon a tawny mat of affluence. I'll start that over. The very air he breathes. She lies upon a tawny mat of effluence and leopard spots. And he's hers, and she knows it, can but barely be seen, crouched and to the left of her. One ear, an eyebrow, and a bit of cheek are all that show of him. The caption, again, suggests that it is fun, fabulous fun, being female at a time like this. And indeed, it looks like fun. Her eyes are huge and subtly closed as leopard spots, and her lips are spread. She is, in fact, a deodored leopardess about to take the male. But again, the caption, you are the very air he breathes. The male is hard upon her. She appears to be undisturbed by this. And with both shaved armpits bared, she arches for him. One is inclined to think of her as being altogether without fear. She smiles and takes the male. Neither deodorant nor effluence could do more. She smiles and she lies there, the very air he breathed. Owl. Let us suppose the truth. I am an owl by virtue of my belief in owls. The owl swoops like a hawk, is still like a rock, shrieks, meditates like God, like air. I believe in owls, and what is more, what is in fact the exact same thing, as you will by now have guessed, I am hawk, rock, rodent, whale, and God, which troubles me, which makes of me myself an owl. It's a poem called Movies, Left to Right. I'm indebted to Bruce Conner, who did couple films which impressed me a lot, both of them 5-minute films, one called Cosmic Gray and one called Movie. Movies, left to right. The action runs left to right, cavalry, the water skiers. Then a 5-hour film, The Sleeper, a man sleeping for 5 hours in 15 sequences, sleeping left to right, cavalry, a love scene, elephants. Also the world goes left to right, the moon and all the stars, sex too, and newspapers, catastrophe. In bed, my wives are to my left. I embrace them, moving left to right. I have lived my life that way, growing older, moving eastward. The speedometer, the bank balance, architecture, good music. All that is most real moves left to right, declares my friend the scenarist, puffing on a white cigar, eating the Herald Tribune, the New Republic. My life is a vision, a mechanism that runs from left to right. I have lived badly. Water skier, I was until recently in the U.S. Cavalry. Following that, I played elephant to a lead by Tarzan. Later, I appeared in a film called The Sleeper. Till today, standing on the edge of things, falling and about to fall, asking why, I look back, nowhere. Meanwhile, one or more wives go on stilts for the mail. I'm also indebted to Andy Warhol. It's a poem about a comedian. It's called The Act of Eating. The comedian who, grimacing and frowning, eats his handkerchief, drinks water, eats his water glass, eats his wristwatch, dinner jacket, takes off his shoes, eats his socks, breaks up his audience. A young girl goes berserk, smashes windows, eats the glass. Many are in tears, others stupefied. A few, filled with panic, run for the exits. The comedian's naked, stands there weeping. We watch him eat his eyelashes, eyelids, mustache, and beard. I hold the girl's hand, begin chewing her fingernails, licking the cuticles. He winks at us, does some turns, soft shoe, cartwheels, looks at his watch. He shuffles into the wings, eating dismay. Whitish lights come on. He reappears, eating a violin. He plucks the strings, then swallows them. He despises us, knows us perfectly, stands there, eyeballs in hand, grinning obsequiously, proclaiming his love, wearing baggy pants and a boiled shirt. The spotlight begins to dim, goes back on itself, fades completely. He stands there, luminescent, the sounds of swallowing. What is left leers and dances on the stage. The room crowds in on us. We clutch our ticket stubs, slide them into our ears. He runs through a series of transformations, quick changes, reappears in grandmother's house dress, flowery, beaming, affectionate, without a face, with real teeth. We wait there enraged. He eats the world. I grew up in Chicago, and I'm working now on a series of poems about the city. And I'm reading things about the city. The poem that I'm putting together will involve quotations from certain articles. For instance, a book published in 1909 called Town Tips, Seen Chicago Guide, which tells the tourist on how to find his way around the city. It's a book that was published a few years after the Chicago fire, and it opens, "Everyone is interested in fire." And this quote follows. "It will avail you nothing to be told a place is so many blocks north if you start to find it by going east, west, or south. Be always on the safe side and ask which is north. If no policeman is in sight, ask a fireman." Halsted Street, Chicago. "It is Chicago. It is Chicago. I am trying to plug in. My finger in my navel. In Halsted Street, with holes in it. In an electric light socket. Buzz, buzz. I want very badly to plug in. I put my left forefinger in my ear. And my other forefinger, I put that exactly on the nose between the eyes of little orphan Annie, who appears daily, twice daily, in fact, on the back pages of the Chicago Tribune. I can't stand holes. I kiss people when they talk or put my finger in. also railroad tracks. I walk on them. One day it rained. I walked for 14 hours. I walked all the way north to Wisconsin. And it is true. It was good to learn. If people see that you care for them, they do not mind your plugging in. Coming home, no one on the bus minded my plugging in. I plugged into their buttonholes and shoes, the shoelace eyes in them. I came back strong. I came back with all my fingers and my toes too, back once and for all now. I unscrewed the telephone. I put my fingers in, click, click, the operator. I stammered out my message, my latest coming, deepest feelings, vibrations, revelations. A failure to understand me, anger on my part, and a new urge to plug in. The bent coin release, the holes in urinals, God's left eye, heaven too, outer space, the ionosphere, the stratosphere, the Milky Way, and universe in general, like that. That poem has an epigraph to it. It's called, well, it's from Thelonious Monk, who says, "It's always night, or we wouldn't need light." This is a three-line chorus from a song that was sung at Fort Dearborn. "Oh, we're camped on sand of a wild, wild land at a place they call Chicago. Waldheim Cemetery. We are in Chicago's Waldheim Cemetery. I am walking with my father. My nose, my eyes, left pink wrinkled oversized ear, my whole face is in my armpit. We are at the stone beneath which lies my father's mother. There is embedded in it a pearl-shaped portrait. I do not know this woman. I never saw her. I am enraged, indignant. I clench my fist. I would like to strike her. My father weeps. He is Russian. He weeps with conviction, sincerity, enthusiasm. I am attentive. I stand there listening beside him. After a while, a little bored but moved, I decide myself to make the effort. I have paid strict attention. I have listened carefully. Now I too will attempt tears. They are like song. They are like flight. I fail." I'm going to pause for a moment. This is a poem called Marriage. "I lie down in darkness beside her, this earth in a wedding gown. Who, what she is, I do not know, nor is it a question the night would ask. I have listened. The woman beside me breathes. I kiss that, a breath of her, and glow, glow. Hush now, my shadow. Let us, day breaks, depart. Yes, and so we have." Nightgown, wife's gown. Where do people go when they go to sleep? I envy them. I want to go there too. I am outside of them, married to them, nightgown, wife's gown, women that you look at beside them. I knock on their shoulder blades, ask to be let in. It is forbidden, but you're my wife, I say. There is no reply. Arms around her, I caress her wings. I'll read that once more. Nightgown, wife's gown. Where do people go when they go to sleep? I envy them. I want to go there too. I am outside of them, married to them. Nightgown, wife's gown. Women that you look at beside them. I knock on their shoulder blades, ask to be let in. It is forbidden, but you're my wife, I say. There is no reply. Arms around her, I caress her wings. This is a political poem called December 1963. It's the last of a group of five that I wrote, well, shortly after the death of Kennedy. I wrote it in Washington. December 63. The talk is of Johnson and a Congress which has done nothing. The accents are of Virginia, Maryland, the whining South. I sit in the back booth of a Chinese restaurant, Washington, 1963. Before me lie the New York Times, some old classwork, and a journal I carry everywhere. I am bemused, distracted even. All over things fly in and out of windows. Roaches run up and back across the floor. What is there to object to? I drink beer and eat Chinese fortune cookies. I am heartened. The revelation is at hand. Old classwork, objects on a table. All landscapes, the murals and tapestries. It is time to go home now. The new snow, slush, the dark. Our seven children, my three wives, wait for me. Already I am embracing them, the snow upon me, pockets full of presents, certainty, groceries. I am, on the whole, in step with a new administration. The next is also a political poem. For the past 4 or 5 years, I've kept up a journal, and it's a record of random observations, events, newspaper quotations, bewilderments. In the summer of 64, I spent 2 entire days watching the Republican National Convention on television, making notes. And at the same time, I was reading from the July 16th issue of the New York Times and the Wall Street Journal. The poem I'm about to read is about 11 sections. You know, it's a long, thin poem. It's a collage. And it's called The Republican National Convention. It opens with a quote from Norman Mailer, who had an article about the pre-convention activities in Esquire. This was published in November of 64. Mailer writes one sentence. Morality had wed itself to surrealism. There were cockroaches in all the purple transistors. We were distractible. One, the grape white father, grope with Ike, groper, our party, yarp, yarp. Tonight I speak to the American mother whose son is even now crawling through the jungle muck of Vietnam. Ellie Peterson, party's chairman for women. Roll call, nominations, Sally and asswipe. Preferring injustice to disorder. From the New York Times. Arthur J. Bentline, commissioner of the Department of Air Pollution Control, said yesterday that the public could now use a new direct dialing telephone system to report air pollution. The new numbers are 566-2730, 566-2731, and 566-2732. Two. Now then, did you know Eisenhower, really, I have no feeling of my own. The John Dirksen Society, Kirch, Ketchel, Evening Grossbeaks, Eisenhower, hold up our head up with the nations. Why, says the writer Richard Yates, it's Daddy Warbucks. General Scranton, Governor Goldwaddles, I don't believe in extremism except in the two fields of morals and exact science. 3. There's Dick. Why, it's Dick Nixon. No, that ain't Dick, that's Mickey Mouse. New York Times. To compensate for the defections, the principal foreseeable additions to Republican strength that the Goldwater nomination can bring will come from the unknown numbers of normally Democratic voters. Also from the New York Times, a chicken about to be hatched emits small, high-pitched noises as it taps and scratches at the eggshell, he said. The hen replies with three sounds from the chicken vocabulary. Gluck, gluck to establish contact. Tuck-a-tuck-tuck to encourage the chicken to the feed, and or to calm it. This Dr. Bomber, a scientist in the New York Times. All the news that's print, we fit. 4. What made us? Take a moment. Our forefathers, forebears. Chirp, chirp. I would have you condemn extremism. In a moment, yes, but Eisenhower, the states in which they're situate. The missile gap, Dr. Pepperhammer. Mr. Goldwater's militant foreign policy, although highly overseas, does not worry the troublesome to our relations White House as a domestic political issue. Really, I have no feeling of my own. 5, delegate. The frenzied nose, roll call, nominations, bulbous hysteria, porcine blue eyes, frailty, obscenity, toothless Christian flap ears, white Western, we want G, we want G. This wrapped hat says it for him, thinks him to his feet. H. Hufsein, skin hangs, scar off the right jaw, twin chins tie like a bedspread, mouth, tuck-a-tuck-tuck it says, bang, bang. Section 6 is an epigraph. The simple old-time smells of witch hazel and gin. Hannah Green. 6, demonstration. Hoot, hoot, hoopee, hoopee, war, war, whoopee. Fucko Nifkins for president. De stuff, you know, no, she no. Sure she do, sure he do. Fucko's got the goods, hooray, Fucko, hooray. 7, a commercial. Gulf, no Knox, 4-power premium gasoline, the sign of the orange disc. Charles River Basin, Channel 5, Boston. What do you think of the plank? Oh yes, strong. Governor Goldwaddles, General Scranton. 8. Out the window, the face, 16 stories high, whole flights between hairline and lips, still bland in the face. Black glasses like a white hair, clank, clank, that iron will, unshakable, unhangable. Whoopee, whoopee. 9. Send in the call out, America, God vomit you. 10. You understand? Now, from here on in, the blue balloons, we got to start now, here tonight. Camera zooms in. Build us an enduring peace. Goldwater. We are walking flat-footed into a full-fledged and possibly fatal space gap. Eisenhower. Now, I'm not against precedents. I'm not particularly for them. It's the reason you're here. It's the reason I'm here. It's the reason 1964 is here. I speak to you of the present administration. Please do not misunderstand. I celebrate, I simplify a couple of particularly things. Fellow Americans, no differences. Realist. What I mean to say is you with me, or partly unity? In other words, gentlemen, ladies, and up her go berry cherry, you know where, don't you? There's an epitaph that follows the poem from the New York Times, Dublin, July 24th. The Society of Friends, World Committee for Consultation, decided today to appoint a group to study the 300-year-old Quaker Declaration Against War with a view to bringing it up to date. This is a poem called There Is No Reason Why Not to Look at Death. There is no reason why not to look at death. A good poem also is also death contained. I once pulled out all the business feathers of a crow. He became better, God complete, black. Nothing makes barely looking haste to put away the dead, except the dead involved in business. The earth, the seasons, the poets, before they become poets, make no haste to put away the dead, nor God. The Lord giveth, and he taketh away, by and large, slowly, and without haste. Crow bombs are here not my concern, nor ordinary bombs, but plain decay, the proper autumnal process subsequent to life. Emphasis need not be placed upon the soul. My point involves the leaf, as an example, and the unplumaged crow. Nor is my point one with flesh and no blood, but one of death. I am fond of death, and or the self-contained. This poem may not be said to be about souls, but of things, feathers and leaves, leafless trees and the featherless bodies of crows. Finally, let us say I have been asked to write simply. The last poem is on those sheets. It's called Thousand-Year-Old Fiancé. We are alone, death's thousand-year-old fiancé and I. The thing suggests itself to me. I step onto the front parts of her feet and stand like that facing her, saying nothing. In moments, I lose 20 pounds and sweat. My nose bleeds. It occurs to me I may never before have acted out of instinct. We do not embrace. She is in her middle 60s, with varicose veins, whitish hair, and buttocks as large as Russia. Things come off of her in waves, merriment, exuberance, benevolent body lice, 100-year-old blackheads. I kiss her hives. I lick her nose that shows she drinks bottles and bottles of Fleischmann's every day. I am standing there in my Jewish hair, facing her with my life. Knock, knock. It is death in spats and a blue business suit. I stand there in my Jewish hair, facing him. He is very still, grinning, grayish, bemused. Pretty soon I begin to scream. All night I scream. Yeah. After a while, I go under and kiss her ass. It takes a bit. Fathers and sons, I am up to my knees in the moon. Kiss this ghost, she says, of a certain light. I plunge my tongue into it to the ears. Madam, I say, astounded, choking, feverish, I have not as yet had you. Have me, she says. Under my foreskin there is a star, whole constellations. God damn it, I am not speaking to you here of sex. Kiss me here, she says. Kiss me there. Stars, ghosts, and suns, winged, we are all of us winged, the one thing there is of us. Death, you old lecher, I affirm you, I confront you with my balls. I revere dead fish and sunken submarines, the little red schoolhouse and the American way. Let us in fact join hands with the universe. Death, I have news for you, I climb into your young fiancée 11 times a night. There are signs that she is pregnant. Death, there is nothing I will not love. Thank you.